Esto viene de la web, ¿no?
Streamfluenda.com.
Y cada vez antes la puse bien. Streamfluenda.com. Dicho la misma entrada.
Pon la cámara bien.
Ya. ¿Confían en ti?
No he empezado a grabar.
Sí que
si quiero, grabo, sí.
Vale, pues.
O grabar.
Dice que hay algo delante de la cámara.
Sí.
Pregunta que por qué no está en un día.
Está en un trigo, está en un trigo.
Pero está
mal.
Ok.
Ok. Ok, great. I don't want to waste much time on introducing Mark Shuttleworth. Establishment could create, because it's kind of the people in low places who know how things work, not the 25-year-old CNA editor thinks about technology. I want to know what's hot and cool and happening in a university in the Canary Islands, right? Because that's much more likely to be genuinely cutting edge, genuinely interesting. So this whole shift towards collaboration is touching every industry. It's touching media. In 10 years' time, there will be global TV channels that publish like Slashdot publishes. I'm absolutely willing to bet that right now. The principles that we're learning in Wikipedia, the principles that we're learning in Slashdot, the principles that we're learning in the whole podcasting movement are going to move forward and touch almost every kind of industry. So it's worth delving a little bit deeper into the whole field of collaboration, and thanks very much. Trying to understand it a little bit better and then understand how that impacts on us. Okay, so why do we call this phenomenon? By the way, I don't have any slides because I can never make slides, I'm not an artist. I don't have any of those soft skills. So what I have is pictures that go into space. And so I always stick those up. And if you guys have any questions about going into space, because this was absolutely the coolest thing that I ever got to do, it's the greatest privilege to have gone to Russia and Star City and trained with the cosmonauts and flown. And someday I hope to go back and do it again, but perhaps further and deeper on a different craft or something like that. But just for fun, I'll put those pictures up there, and if they're interesting and you have any questions about what's going on, then please do ask them, because maybe there's some guys here who are interested in space. And I'll switch from that to some other things that I want to show along the way. Okay, so why do we call this the the open source movement and not the open content movement, even though open content is outside? Because it happened first in open source, it happened first in software engineering. So we have to ask the question, why did this collaborative movement happen first in source code, in software engineering? And the only answer that I can come up with is because we had certain key things, certain key principles in place before anybody else did. We had certain tools, processes, ideas in place way before anybody else did. And those tools started out as very simple, right? Diff, patch, and email. Back in the 1970s, people were doing open source. They didn't call it open source. They didn't call it free software, right? It was just the way we developed software. And they had these tools, diff, patch, and email, that allowed them to work separately, but then compare their work in meaningful and interesting ways, communicate that, and then merge it. And those tool sets have become more and more sophisticated. We started out with diff, patch, and email, which is pretty primitive. And then we developed revision control systems like RCS. Then we scaled that up to be able to do revision control on the whole project, CVS. And that was suddenly amazing because you could have people all over the world with a shared view of this complicated content that they're creating. And we could all see how that was changing over time. We could see who made which change at what particular time. And it was that really started to accelerate the growth of open source, because now collaboration didn't have to be based on personal relationships. You didn't have to know who to email your patches to. You just found the project, you got permission to be a CVS submitter, and now suddenly you were part of that collaboration pool. And that wave has carried the open source movement forward until probably 2 or 3 years ago. And what's interesting to me now is that I think we're at the start of a third wave of collaboration in the open source movement. So let's leave open source for a while, let's leave free software for a while, and go to other areas of collaboration. The wiki, the creation of the wiki. What's interesting about the wiki is that it's developed far faster, it's collaborative content, but it's developed far faster than the open source movement. So the question is why? And I think it's got to do with barriers to entry. If you think about it, very low barriers to entry to go in and edit a wiki. You can, within half an hour, you can go from discovering Wikipedia to actually adding a page or correcting, improving somebody else's page. Even if you've never seen a wiki before, you can figure out what you need to do to register and to start creating content. And that's kind of extraordinary. And so my guess is that while open source has taken 25 to 30 years to develop, other industries, other forms of collaboration are going to move much faster. Okay, so that takes us through in the field of open source until about 2002-2003, when CVS was king, and we were starting to understand how you created a good community, how you created good collaboration within a community. We developed because that's how you get people to develop a shared sense of what they're creating. You set up mailing lists so that people can have conversations about a topic, and so that you can archive those conversations over time. You can see and remember who said what when. You set up probably some sort of revision control infrastructure, so that if you're creating code, you're able to get collaboration around that code. This stuff is really well established. So what's the next step? Where do we go from here in the field of collaboration? And this is the bit that I've been really, really interested in over the last 2 years. The question, how do we start to create collaboration between projects and other projects? Now, why is that important? We've got all of these tools for collaborating really efficiently within a project. So I bet within a KDE community, people are really efficient and effective. You know exactly how to fight a bug. You know exactly who to ping to get something done. You know exactly where in the wiki you need to go and add a particular piece of information. And so within that community, the collaboration framework is getting pretty good. With the emergence of Collab and tools like that, we're starting to schedule our activities, we're starting to organize ourselves much better within the project. But communications between projects are not so good. And so this is where I've been really interested and working very hard over the last 2 years. For example, if you are interested in a piece of upstream code, say Conqueror. Now Conqueror exists as a piece of software. It has a community around it. It's part of a broader community, the KDE community. But it also lives inside distributions. There are lots of distributions that ship it. And so the interesting question arises, what kind of collaboration do we see between the upstream Conqueror community and the distributions? Other people who effectively work on that code, manage bugs for that code, have ideas for features which they implement and produce patches for. What kind of collaboration do we get between projects? And the interesting thing is that even in the open source community, which is far more advanced than anybody else in the software engineering and software development, far more advanced than anyone else globally on collaboration. Collaboration between projects is still really bad. So imagine, for example, that there's a bug in Firefox, and you want to know if someone's found a fix for that bug. To really know, you're going to have to go to Bugzilla.mozilla.org. You're going to have to go to Bugzilla.rehab. You'll have to go to Deadbugs. You'll have to go to Bugzilla.ubuntu. You'll have to go to a bunch of different places where people are actually recording software defect information, bug information about Firefox. And that means that most people don't do it. That's really what's kept the bug tracking communities kind of separate, because it's a lot of effort to go into someone else's tools, right? You need to create a new account. You need to figure out which tool they're using and how it works, because they're all quite different. You need to figure out how to search and how to find the existing thing. And then you need to remember a bug number, which is quite unrelated to the bug number that you had to remember for your infrastructure. And that becomes very inefficient, so people don't do it. But when you're working in a distro, for example, it's really hard to be consistent about pushing bugs upstream, because every upstream project uses a different piece of infrastructure. And so it seemed to me 2 years ago that this is a major inefficiency in the open source world, collaborating on bugs. Another example is translations. There are guys here who work on distros that are focused on a particular community that speaks a particular language. And so they have a real interest, a real incentive to make sure that that's translated, that the software that they ship is fully translated into that local language. And there are also guys upstream who are responsible for translations, and they want to see the upstream globally translated. Those two communities are distinct communities. They can never actually be the same community, because distros are in a position of trying to be consistent across lots and lots of pieces of software. So if you're a distro, you're shipping a piece of GNOME software and a piece of KDE software, then you need the translations to be consistent between those, because you don't want file to be translated differently in one application to the other application. Someone using the application locally wants to use the same translation. But often projects disagree on how you should translate things. So for example, here in Spain, there's a disagreement between the KDE and the GNOME communities on how you translate the word file. different people, they edit profiles, they edit them offline effectively. They're a real revision control infrastructure. We can't see who added a translation when, because that all happens locally to the people's computers. We can't see, for example, where there are explicit differences between upstream and distro and why those differences are in place. And we can't easily coordinate translations across lots of different pieces of software because they're all fragmented communities. So translations is the second area where this kind of high-level collaboration is missing in the open source world. And then let's talk about the code itself, the actual the lifeblood of our community, the thing that we produce. And there, as we started to look into it, we also found that we could do a lot better on collaboration. So when Red Hat makes a patch, for example, they publish that patch as open source because the license is required, because it's good practice, and then they communicate that patch to upstream. They may say, hey, we've fixed this bug, or we've communicated that patch. But that patch kind of lives separate from the tree itself. So if you can imagine the CVS tree moving forward, it's a living thing. It has a skeleton, it has a structure, it has history. We can track it in time. We can do all sorts of interesting things with it because it's in strong revision control. But we can't do that with a patch. For example, there may be a newer version of the patch. But if we're just looking at email that says, here's a patch attached, we don't know if there's a newer version of that patch. How many guys have been through this process of trying to find patches out there for a piece of software that you care about? How many guys? Okay. And is it fun? Not exactly, right? So, it's interesting, if you look at the open source community at a project level, we've taught the whole world how to do collaboration. But if you look at us as an industry across players, we still have a long way to go and lots of ways in which we can improve. And so that's really what kind of inspired me to do something in the open source world. The reason I get to do this kind of amazing stuff and just live a very exciting life is because of Free Software. I was incredibly lucky when I was a student because someone gave me a stack of Slackware disks, and I got very drunk one night and tried to install them on the university computers, and it worked. It took a bit longer than it would have if I'd been caught, and I got caught, which caused a lot of trouble. But it worked, and so suddenly I had this environment that could set me free. And then after university, when I wanted to set up a business, I needed infrastructure that would be stable and reliable. Didn't have any money, so we need to be cheap and just be able to deploy it in America and not worry about it, and deploy it in Europe and not worry about it. And so as I built this little business called Thought, as that grew up, all of it was built on free software. So I felt like I needed to give something back. And so I thought, okay, I'll fund the work to start addressing these problems in collaboration, start creating collaborative frameworks. I also started to get to think that the distro world could improve in collaboration. And so that was the idea behind the Ubuntu family of distributions when we started out. It is not to be a distribution, but to be a framework for collaboration between distributions. And so that's why we have Ubuntu and Kubuntu and Edubuntu and Scubuntu. There are now lots and lots of other Ubuntu springing up all around the world as people effectively say, okay, we like some of the ideas there, but we want to do it differently. That we still want to collaborate. And so the problems we're trying to solve in this community are really all about collaboration. And so what we've done is we started out within the Debian environment. We've got about 22 guys who are Debian developers, which is a very strong core group of Debian developers. We're incredibly lucky with the team we have. And so one of the key things is to try and make sure that any changes we make are visible immediately to the Debian community. So we publish every time we upload a package, it goes into the process, it gets analyzed, and the patches that are unique to Ubuntu are published, and that is now linked into the Debian package management system. So can you see from a collaboration point of view, hopefully we're in a much better position with regard to code flow, because now instead of having to go hunt somewhere, the Debian guy sees our patches effectively as published. If he doesn't want to take them, fine, but he doesn't have to go hunt for them to find them. And we're now starting to work on doing the same thing upstream effectively, trying to create patch management and branch management infrastructure for upstreams as well, so that when we publish a patch, upstreams would see that patch immediately. And that same collaboration, our lives to give each of those projects the freedom to change anything. And that means that they would have to have their own archives. That means that effectively have to be, to a certain extent, different communities, specialist communities. But I really want them to be able to have the confidence that when they make a patch, that patch is instantly available to all of the other distros, and it's available to upstream. So that's the infrastructure that we've been working on. I'll show you a little bit of that infrastructure now. So I should tell you, the Russians have this interesting tradition that the crew, it's a sort of superstition, that the crew never sees a rocket until the day of the launch. You're not actually allowed to see a rocket. You spend all your time in the simulator, and you see the actual Soyuz, which is, the Soyuz is now attached to the rocket, and it's inside that white fairing. The Soyuz is about 7 meters long, weighs 7 tons, and it's like putting three big guys into the front seat of Beetle. It's very, very small. So the first time you see a rocket is actually now, when you drive up to it in the morning. And the incredible thing is, there are 300 people around the base of the rocket, just going crazy, shouting and cheering. The rocket is fully fueled, so you've got 300 tons of basically high explosives in this rocket. It kind of hisses, and it has ice on it because the liquid oxygen is extremely cold. So this rocket feels like this living thing. It's kind of shaking it, ready to go. It's really quite an incredible feeling. We've tried to pull all of this stuff together and publish it in a way, because it seems to me that the rules of collaboration are you have to publish everything you do. Think of a wiki, it's always published all the time. A revision control system is always published all the time. So it seems that the best way to manage this collaboration is over the web. You have to have a low barrier to entry, so make it so that people have to do the least amount to be able to participate in this collaboration. And then we have the idea that through one infrastructure, you can look at a piece of software and you can see the bugs that we file on that software. And you can track from those bugs upstream to those bugs in the distribution. You can also look at the translations. So there's another tab up there that talks about translations. And you can also look at things like bounties and infrastructure like that. In future, you see the calendar link over there. In future, we actually want to start helping projects to do project management. So as you publish release schedules and project plans and so on, publish that in such a way that it's actually available for other projects to leverage. So you might have, for example, the KDE project says, okay, we'll release this milestone on this date, we'll release a preview on this date, we'll release our final release on this date. And you can have another project that says, okay, in our project plan is that release date over there from KDE. And if that release date slips, then our release dates have to slip. And so we can start to integrate the work of different distributions and different upstreams in a much more cohesive and coherent kind of fashion. So let's look at translations as an example. What's a little bit difficult to demonstrate here is to show the collaboration, I kind of have to wear two different hats. So if you can imagine that I've got two different translation windows. Wearing two different hats. One is as an upstream translator, and one is as a distro translator. And what I want to do is show that it's possible to have these two guys working together, even if they don't know that the other guy exists. And that's the other essential ingredient of good collaboration. You don't want people to have to know who they should collaborate with in advance. That should just emerge from the system. So, we can do stuff like we can say, okay, show me everything that can be translated in a particular release of the distribution across all of the different languages. And so this is just sample data, so there's going to be different. So I can go and see, okay, so here's some strings that need to be translated for So I'm going to go translate that as evolution of Facebook, and I'll put a space in there. I was hacking on this code about 20 minutes ago, so I hope I didn't break it. Okay, so if we go back in here, then you should see that that is now being, okay, now you can see it knows that it's being translated over there. And that's inside the Pori, effectively, that's inside the distribution. So in a separate window, I'm going to wear a different hat. Now I'm going to translate the same thing, and I'm going to translate it for upstream. So the page looks the same. But effectively, if you look at the top, you'll see that I'm upstream product evolution, but I'm not in a distro. And what's interesting here is it says, okay, I'm not an official translator for this file because you want collaboration, but you also don't want everything to be in a wiki. You want to have some stuff which is official. And you can immediately see that this guy translated here, currently published elsewhere, this translated this string in a particular way. And in a week or two, we'll have an update so that you can just click on that effectively and take it. If I want to then translate that differently, I'm going to say, I've done this before, I'll do it without a space. Let's go back to that page. You can now see that I've translated it without a space. The other guy, the next time he comes to this page, we'll see the alternative translation. Now they're both by the same guy because it was logged into the system at the same time. But the idea is to try and create this accidental collaboration. These two guys didn't have to know that they existed. These two guys didn't have to meet in advance. They don't have to agree on anything. They effectively just can leverage off one another's work. It's a bit like a wiki event. You don't have to know everybody else who's contributed previously. You just go and build on top of their work. The same sort of idea starts to come out in bugs. The idea that we can say a single bug effectively lives in lots of places. And let's see if we can build a framework for collaboration around bugs. And the tricky thing here is that when you start to look at a bug that exists in lots of different places, the whole concept about what a bug is starts to change. For example, if you've got a bug in Apache, and you're now thinking you want to track the status of that bug in Red Hat, in Fedora, in Red Hat Enterprise, in SUSE, in Debian, in Ubuntu, in Gentoo, and upstream, right? The question then is, what's the status of the bug? It's a bit like a Heisenberg then, because it could have lots of different statuses, right? It becomes a little quantum mechanical. And so effectively, you have to track that status in lots of different places. Upstream Firefox, it says upstream Ubuntu, but that doesn't make any sense. It's solid data. I should fix that. Ubuntu and Debian, you can see the same bug is being tracked in lots of different places. And what we've got quite a lot of work to do is to say people aren't going to change their bug tracking system because of this. So each of those and then need a linkage to the actual bug tracking system where that's being tracked. So we can say, okay, we link that Debian entry to Debian's. And when Debian fixes the bug, it automatically shows up as being fixed over here. So the idea is then that in one place you can see, oh, this bug is fixed over there. And where we want to get to is the idea that you can say, show me a list of all of my bugs, the big bugs which are assigned to me, like for upstream, which have a fix somewhere. So that you can pick all that low-hanging fruit, all of that sort of going to find patches, all of that trawling around the mailing list should become a lot simpler then, right? As a community between projects, we're now starting to collaborate. So this is something that I'm really excited about. Okay, so that's translations, that's bugs. And the last angle that we've been really focused on is area of code. Now, the state of the world about 2 years ago was that there was CVS, there was Subversion, which was emerging. Subversion is kind of like CVS, and then it's centralized, right? You have a central server, and that's the project revision control server. But it's much better than CVS because it treats every change as a change to the whole project, and so as opposed to basically just lots of random changes to different files. So you can have clear and coherent sort of change sets, which is a very good step for going from CVS to Subversion. But you still have this idea that code lives somewhere. There's only one place where that code can really live, and everybody else is a second class citizen. I mean, think about it, when you pull code from CVS server and then make it package. was cool. And so I started to find work in the Arch community, which is the TLA in Arch. And so we hired a bunch of guys to work with it. And TLA became as bizarre, which proved, I think, that you could do this, what I'm going to show you. But clearly it had some limitations. It's kind of like a version one. And so we hired Martin Poole, who some of you guys might know. He wrote just CC, Ccache, as a kernel contributor, and so on. And he'd been writing a lot about revision control. So we said, okay, let's write a version 2 for this from scratch in Python, which is fast, clean, light, and pulls in the best features of Bitkeeper and Arch and Monitor and Docs, some of the others that were starting to emerge. What happened then was Bitkeeper blew up in the kernel, and so it suddenly became, well, everybody wants to write a revision control system. So there are now about 10 distributed revision control systems, which is very cool because the best of the world. I think it happens to be NAS 2.0, which is currently BZR as NG. So if you go to bizarre-ng.org, you'll see information about BZR, and I would urge you to check it out. Why is distributed revision control important? Because it essentially says everybody out there in the world who is interested in our code, who's a potential contributor, no matter who they work for or what their experience, deserves rights. Deserves to be a first-class citizen. If they make a change, that change is important. It may be important just to them, may be important to a community around them, or may be important to the whole community. But that change is important, and we need to be able to know how that change relates to the core code. So in the old days, right, we had CVS as a version in the middle, and all of these other patches had no metadata. They were just a patch. With distributed revision control now, when you publish a patch, you don't publish a patch, you publish a branch. Everybody can create a branch. And the nice thing about that is, of course, it's easy now to know what's the latest version of that patch, because you can just scroll forward effectively in time. You've got revision control of the patch. And you can say, when did that patch fork off from the tree, from here? And you can do merges between patches that live out there, branches that live out there, and the mainline effectively. So if you can imagine that we move from a world, I believe we're going to move from a world where projects have this centralized, locked-down revision control with either some version of CVS, to a world where effectively you may have two or three project branches, which are, for example, your stable branch, your current development branch, and all the supported branches. Those are kind of major branches that are published out there. In effect, they're kind of automated, they're managed automatically, right? And then every contributor, effectively, has their own collection of branches. And anybody in the world can create a branch. You just say, Baz, bizarre, branch, that code over there. Boom. And you get all of that code, like there's a working directory, with all of the revision control history, and you can then start committing locally. So the cool thing about that is, you see an upstream if you're interested, you say, Baz, get, Baz, branch, give it a branch name, and then you get on a plane and start flying. And then you can commit locally, pass commit, pass commit, pass commit. If you decide that actually you want to start working on two different features at the same time, you just make another branch locally, pass branch. Then you can commit on that, pass commit, pass commit, pass commit. If you want to go back and work on the other branch, you say pass switch, go back to the other branch. And so you start to be able to effectively work locally with branches in full revision control, as if dramatically different, that the world suddenly took attention. That was when companies start to say, hey, how can we collaborate with that infrastructure? And you know, they made some mistakes along the way, Safari and so on. But that's a learning process that, that people go through. And it was also, you know, it was when Firefox delivered real value over and above Internet Explorer that suddenly these campaigns to straight Firefox took off. And so it seems to me that on the desktop front, we have the same challenges. It's not about doing what guys have already done, it's about taking the next step and really imagining the future. That seems to me that the thing that we can do that is going to really blow the writers from the world away is to take the collaborative principles that we know, that we've developed, and deliver those for the people who use computers because they have to. So imagine that you're working on a word processor document, right? How many of you guys write word processor documents? I never use a word processor. I use VI and HTML, right? But most people out there use word processors. So we need to try and figure out how we can make word processors as collaborative as the infrastructure that we use. We need to figure out how to deliver revision control to word processors. And we need to go even further. We need to make that collaboration real time. So imagine a secretary who's typing a letter, right? She has a word processor document as we know about it. And on her Twitter desktop, she has a list of the people that she normally talks to. She clicks on her boss's link, up comes the screen, and they have a conversation. A voice over IP conversation. And the free software world, we would do that over IRC, right? But thinking ahead of it, that this is going to be a voice over IP or video IP conversation. Then she says, okay, I think I've got that ledger right. Do you just want to have a look at it? And instantly on his screen, he sees the same document. He can see her cursor. He clicks somewhere else, and he starts typing. And they both see the same document being edited collaboratively. Imagine a wiki, but with real-time collaborative editing. How many of you guys have seen some Ether editor? Some Ether editor. Find a guy who has Mac OS and install some Ether editor. It will blow your mind. This is the future of collaborative content creation, right, in real time. And this is going to require all sorts of thinking that's never been done before. And the free software community is the place to effectively drive that innovation. We have to, for example, show two cursors at the same time. We have to show who edited what parts of the document. Think of UCBS and CBS Annotate, but now in real time, in the office space. That's what we have to create over the next 10, 15 years. And if we can create that functionality before the proprietary software world does it, then we will actually dramatically change the world's perception of what software is all about on the desktop. Because then suddenly, just like Firefox exploded when it delivered innovation, on the desktop side, we'll actually be delivering real innovation. Anyway, guys, I hope that was interesting. I want to thank Jonathan for all the extraordinary work he's done leading the Kubuntu project. Thank you. My dream is that each of these members of the Ubuntu family, effectively, are productive work of people who really care about something. And so to me, it's really important that in the KDE community, there is a distribution that is essentially KDE for KDE. It's driven by Jonathan. The priorities are set, you know, for the KDE community. Much like with Ubuntu, we, you know, happens to be the GNOME release manager and also works on the Ubuntu project. So that is really driven for the GNOME community, right? We use the GNOME fonts, we use the GNOME infrastructure. It's designed to be the best publishing of these guys doing hardware. So Jonathan, I think you've made a fantastic contribution, and thank you very much to all of you guys who've provided the engine that makes all of this possible. So thank you very much, and I hope it's a superb conference.